This is Jim Inkster coming today on the show. We will review the Oscar ceremonies from last night. Big winner was Argo with Best Picture. Joey Watson of the LSU Music and Dramatic Arts School, formerly a filmmaker of renown, he will be with us. Also, Kenny Neal, the fabulous blues musician from Baton Rouge. He's back on his home turf, and we will talk with him about his long and successful career that is ongoing. And from Glasgow Middle School, Laura Lee Cefalu, who heads a parents' organization on some advances at that school in the area of science, technology, engineering, and math. We will talk with Laura Lee Cefalu. All this, but first, the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. We begin our week with a fabulous person from this area who's back in his homeland, Kenny Neal, the wonderful musician. Good morning, Kenny.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
And a man who does his music like few other people and somewhat a prophet in his own land. You've traveled all over the world, haven't you?
Yes, I'm coming right here from Baton Rouge. We managed to do about 20 countries a year.
20 countries
yes.
a year?
Yes.
So how many concerts total each year?
We average about maybe 180.
180.
So it used to be more than that. I'm cutting back.
So basically you're on the road performing one night out of two every night of the year.
Yeah, we're pretty busy. And the last year, you know, I started to cut back a little bit, but.
And you're my age, so at our age, some people would say this probably isn't a productive thing to do, that at some point you'll wear down, but so far so good.
Yeah, it keeps you going, you know. I get home for a while, and then you get the edge to go back out and do it again. So I guess it's just in my blood.
Speaking of your blood, your brothers and your other relatives, you have a fabulous musical family.
Yes, I'm the eldest of 10, and my dad, Rafel Neal, who played around this area for many years, he started us as young kids, and it's something that we always been around and made a career out of it.
And you learned from some of the masters, people like Slim Harpo.
Yes. The man, Mr. Slim Harpo, he was...
How did you meet him?
He was always around the house a lot because my dad and Slim was close friends. And they used to always share equipment, share the van and cars. And I remember one time he was cleaning out the trailer, and I was about 6, 7 years old, and he said, "Hey, go in the trailer and see if you any equipment left in." And I went in, and he closed the doors, and I got phobia. And I kind of tripped out and freaked out, and he was trying to soothe me. So he went into his car and got a harmonica and gave me my first harmonica.
My goodness. Buddy Guy.
Buddy Guy. I left home in 1976 with Buddy Guy and spent 8 years on the road as a bass player with him as well.
And he's still doing it.
He's doing great, playing better than ever, and still full of energy.
Well, when was your big break, if there was a big break?
Well, my big break was in 76 when I left home with Buddy Guy. And then I stayed with him about 8 years, and I got a record deal, which was another big break for me in 85 or 86, somewhere around there, with Alligator Records out of Chicago. And I was only 2 years in with the making music business and doing CDs. And then I went to Broadway, which was bigger and more than I ever thought I would do. I had the lead role in a show called Mewbone, 27 people in my cast. And I moved to New York and stayed on Broadway a little over a year.
That must have been an experience that's benefited you from that time since.
Yes, because, after Broadway, I got international recognition from that. And it really helped my career and my music as well.
297-5633, if you'd like to engage the fabulous Kenny Neal, one of the fine blues musicians anywhere on the planet, and he is back home, and we'll talk with him about a major event this weekend. But Kenny does come home. You heard him. He says he performs in 20 countries on the average every year, but you come this way regularly to perform, and you're no stranger to Baton Rouge.
Oh, yeah, this is home, man. Homegrown right here in Baton Rouge.
What are your favorite venues in Baton Rouge?
Well, we go out and hang out down at the famous Phil Brady on Thursday nights when we get a chance to do that.
Yeah.
And we go over to Teddy's Juke Joint and hang out there and just see all my old friends. And then I go downtown and play over at the Adrian. We hit mm-hmm. that a couple of times a year.
In the old days, you used to go to Tabby's Blues Box, didn't you?
Yeah, man. That's where we all cut our teeth right there at Tabby Blues Box.
Baton Rouge is an underrated city when it comes to music. People like you grew up here. You know it. But why are we a well-kept secret in some places?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing that get me. Because you know, New Orleans get a lot of recognition. But back in the days, I think they had a tendency to go, if they look for musicians and music, they go to New Orleans. And same for our blues. They go up to Chicago and say a home of the blues, but we have a big treasure here.
297-5633 is your number. Wade at Louis. Wade, good morning. You're on the air with Kenny Neal. Hi, Wade.
Hey, listen, I appreciate y'all taking my call. I used to go see you at Phil Brady's often many years ago, but I saw your brother, Lil Ray, play often there, and he was so good. I was wondering what he's doing these days.
Well, this Saturday you'll be able to come and catch him live on stage. I think he goes on around 3 o'clock, and he's doing great.
Thank you, Wade. This Saturday, by the way, it's Kenny Neal's Family and Friends, the Heritage Blues Festival, noon until 7:30 at the West Baton Rouge Parish Multipurpose Arena in Port Allen. And not only Kenny, but some great musicians of this area and beyond will be here, including Chris LeBlanc, Lil Ray Neal, Tyree Neal, Larry Garner, Kenny with a guest. Who's your guest?
Rudy Rishar.
All right.
And Larry Garner has Mr. Henry Gray.
And that's not a bad combo.
And Lil Ray Neal have Mr. James Johnson.
And Kenny Acosta.
Yes.
Ms. Pat. And Jonathan Boogie Long. So this is a blues revolution in Port Allen this Saturday. I know you're hoping for good weather. And the canned goods that will be brought will go to the St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. And it is an event that Mr. Kenny Neal has put together. This is your second year.
Yeah, second year.
297-5633, Mike in Port Allen. Mike, good morning. You're on the air with Kenny Neal.
What's up, Kenny?
That's all good.
Man, look, I was out there the last time I heard you play. And, when, you know, I'm a trucker, over-the-road trucker. They call me Skinny Mike, man. You know me personally. I used to sit in on your daddy with the drums. Out there at White Eagle, Bird.
Oh, yeah.
In different places back in the days, man. I used to sit in, and your daddy played for my birthday party when he was playing for that in 2000. He played for my birthday party over at that little restaurant on Florida Street, that lady that moved from Los Angeles.
All right. Well, okay. You got a lot of folks like Mike out there.
That's
who,
so great.
Knew you when. Let's give a listen to Kenny Neal, Kevin Gallagher. Fabulous musician who will be on stage Saturday with several of his friends and family members in Port Allen.
Train run by my back door, whistle blowing a little after four. When blues fall down like rain, I can't eat, I can't sleep. Late at night I hear my guitar weep.
baby. When blues fall down like rain. I never meant to let you go. God knows I love you so. I never meant to do you wrong. Before I knew it, baby, oh baby, you was gone.
Kenny Neal with us for a bit longer. Tremendous blues artist. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. How'd you learn to play like that?
Oh, I don't remember learning to play. I just grew up around a household of instruments around the house, and it's just been there all the time.
What are some of your favorite places to play around the world?
Well, you know, I travel around the world, and New Orleans is one of my favorites. Because, I don't know, something about Louisiana is just different from the rest of the world. When I come here, I just never get enough of my own city and state. And we have a great time at the Jazz and Heritage Fest, which I'll be performing on May the 3rd this year.
Very good. Not your first time to the Jazz and Heritage
No,
Fest.
I did the Jazz Festival with my dad back in the 70s, when it used to be a handful of people, not even quite 1,000 people.
Really?
Yeah.
Now that's hard to believe.
I remember that from when Professor Longhair used to play out there, and it was just starting up, and it was a handful of people at the time, and it's just amazing how much it's grown since then. And we're hoping the same thing for the Kenny Neal Family and Friends Heritage Fest.
Do you prefer to play indoors or outdoors?
Outdoors are my favorites.
And why?
The atmosphere, the vibes are different. You know, you're outside, and it's just a fun time to do it.
Outside, and that's where you'll be this Saturday.
Yes.
But you're pretty good.
But we also cover. So if we have any sprinkles or shower, which we don't call for, we do have a cover over the arena.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, for Kenny, Neal, Dwayne, and Gonzalez. Hi, Dwayne. You're on the air with Kenny.
Hey, Kenny and Jim. How y'all doing today?
Good.
Hey, look, my question to Kenny is, how do you feel that you're treated with your music overseas compared to what you get locally?
Well, you know, I've been blessed in that way. The people here in the States really accept me well, and I get treated well, and it's about the same. I do find that the European audience, we have a much larger audience because they're into it and they read the history on it. So I play for much bigger venues in Europe than I do in the States.
Well, you have played in some tremendous places. You were at the Monterey Festival, weren't
yes.
you?
Yes, yeah, I played Monterey Fest.
What kind of response did you receive?
That's amazing. And I also won the Mo Bay Blues Award for Monterey about 3 years ago, I think.
Okay. Bliss Wade asks, are they going to record or film the sessions this weekend?
Yeah, we will be filming and documenting the show.
Well, all blues fans will get a flat rate for the festival. Just mentioned Kenny Neal, Family and Friends, Heritage Blues Fest. And this is if you'd like to stay somewhere close, if you're planning on making your way in. And you've got some participating hotels, I see, Quality Inn, Hampton
yes.
Inn, Holiday Inn, Motel 6. And Port Allen, Saturday from noon till 7:30 at the West Baton Rouge Parish Multipurpose Arena. That's at 152 Turner Street. And Kenny Neal will be on stage with some amazing people, the Voyage Band, Chris LePlan, Little Ray Neal with James Johnson, Tyree Neal with Charlene Neal, Larry Garner and Henry Gray, Kenny Neal with Rudy Richard, Kenny Acosta, Ms. Pat, and Jonathan Boogie Long. So congratulations, Kenny. Don't be a stranger. Let's talk to you again soon. This is a fascinating man who travels the world as an ambassador to Louisiana and to his hometown of Baton Rouge. Thank you, Kenny.
Thank you.
We'll return after this 90-second timeout with Joey Watson from the LSU School of Music and Dramatic Arts on the Oscars on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Joey Watson from the LSU School of Music and Dramatic Arts is with us. He received his MA in Rhetoric and Film Studies from the University of Memphis, and he is at LSU and, among other things, served as coordinator of C Times C since 2006, and he is involved with digital media, opening the Digital Media Center with some help in the Music and Dramatic Arts building. And he, of course, has been in the film business for a quarter century, and he is one who was here not so long ago. Having worked in Los Angeles, he is no stranger to what happened last night on the stage in Los Angeles as Argo received Best Film for the year. And what was your impression?
Well, I think everybody thought a couple months ago that Lincoln was the forerunner. I mean, 12 nominations going in, you know, Kushner behind it, Spielberg, Daniel Day-Lewis, and then Argo just sort of sneaks in here and steals it. So it ended up, I think the surprise of the evening seemed to be the tension playing out between Argo and Life of Pi. You know, Ang Lee is certainly a very accomplished director. It's the second time he's beaten Spielberg when he's gone up against him, Brokeback Mountain being the other win for Ang Lee. So it was interesting to see sort of the snubs as well. You know, Zero Dark Thirty is certainly an interesting film, but Kathryn Bigelow getting snubbed for a director nomination. And, you know, it's interesting to see how the politics of the Academy play out when certain things win and when certain things don't. But Argo was definitely, I think, you know, the winner of the evening.
Nothing from Beasts of the Southern Wild.
I haven't had a chance this morning to really talk to a lot of my film compadres here to see their thoughts on this. But interestingly enough, yes, I mean, it's certainly a beautiful movie in a visual sense. It was an incredibly emotional experience, and obviously people recognized that and saw that. But I guess when you're going up against Spielberg, Ang Lee, and Affleck, and the power elite of Hollywood, it's sometimes hard to sneak in there. But, you know, that's always the tension, Jim, with the Academy, is sort of the big, larger commercial films versus the independents that try to sneak in, and you know, the commercial successes versus the critical successes, so to speak, and who can win out at the end of the day.
Much of the aftermath of the show, and it was 3.5 hours, has focused upon the host, Seth MacFarlane.
Well, and, you know, growing up, I remember, I can even go back as far as Bob Hope and Johnny Carson, and, you know, I remember Letterman, and, you know, I mean, so I've seen quite a few hosts during my day, not as many as others, I'm sure, but the host is, of course, always a central topic. Seth, I think, was certainly a good choice. I thought he did okay. I thought there were moments where he really hit it, you know, really strongly, and then there were other points where he sort of struggled, and, of course, there were moments where he's just testing boundaries. You know, I thought his Lincoln joke was kind of off color and startling, but the Sound of Music bit was obviously just really smart, you know, right before Christopher Plummer's entrance. So, you know, there was just sort of that tension playing out. I still think that they haven't given – the Academy needs to be consistent and let somebody do it for 2 or 3 years and sort of get their stride like they did with Billy Crystal.
Yeah, well, Seth ruffled some feathers in the audience there.
No question about it, you know, and Family Guy certainly has history there. I'm sure going in he was a little – it was contentious in terms of the relationships with some of those people, sure.
You know that I was reading about him, and I kind of felt sorry for him last night at points because I knew he was going to get nailed today, and he has. But on the morning of September 11, 2001, Seth MacFarlane was scheduled to return to Los Angeles on American Airlines Flight 11 from Boston, suffering a hangover from the previous night and an incorrect departure time, 8:15 instead of 7:45 from his travel agent. He arrived at Logan International Airport 10 minutes too late to board the flight as the gates closed. 15 minutes after departure, American Airlines Flight 11 was hijacked, and at 8:46 a.m. Eastern Time, it was flown into the North Tower of the World Trade Center, obliterating the airplane, killing everyone on board. Seth MacFarlane's a very lucky man, isn't he?
Well, that's a startling fact. I was not aware of that. So that even adds more gravity to, you know, certainly his demeanor of anything goes, right? You never really know what's going to happen next. So let's just roll with it and see what works and what doesn't.
Well, here's one of many reviews. This one from the Huffington Post says, this year's Oscars show on ABC wrapped after a bit over 3.5 hours, and there was much There were a bunch of great moments, a bit of tedium, and a lot of disappointment over the tasteless antics of host Seth MacFarlane. So Seth may not be back next year. You think?
Well, you know, I think they kind of sort of laid the ground for Tina and Amy. There were quite a few mentions very early on that, you know, I think Shatner was the one who brought it out at the beginning. He said, why can't Tina and Amy host it every year? So maybe they'll, you know, take the stage next year. Who knows?
Well, at 76, Shirley Bassey sounded great.
Wasn't that a great montage of Bond films, a great celebration of that history?
It was. And at 70, Barbara Streisand wasn't bad either. Nora Jones sang, and Adele won for Best Song of the Year and did Skyfall. So from a musical perspective, it was a nice evening.
None of these ladies return my phone calls. I really wish they would. I mean, they're all just fantastic. I mean, I think Adele really, I mean, I was following on Twitter last night, which was just fantastic. Twitter is amazing. I was following all the conversation on Twitter and participating some. Adele really, really hit that out of the park. And there are people who are, you know, talking about how she can get an Emmy to go with her Grammys and her Tonys and her Oscars. So it's going to be very interesting to see her push on through and win all the big prizes. But it was certainly a musical night, right, Jim? I mean, it was so many musical numbers, celebration of Broadway in many ways there last night. I think that was definitely evident.
297-5633, Joey Watson from LSU is with us. And for those unfamiliar with Joey, I last time on, we talked about it. You spent many years in the film industry, and you have made movies. It's not an easy task, is it?
No, we actually were shooting a movie this weekend. We did three scenes this weekend for a film that we're making for a graduate course that I'm teaching right now. The film is called Calculations. And it's interesting, too, in that context, Jim, because we're talking about, you know, working from commercial industry where you're really on a timeline and you're focusing on making a film with somebody else's money. And so time is so precious versus making it in an educational environment where it's you're teaching as you go. So you have sometimes an inexperienced crew or some crew with little experience. And so you're trying to teach and be professional at the same time in terms of sort of gearing them towards what that simulated experience would be like in a professional environment. So we certainly got a full spoonful of that this weekend. It was great.
Joey Watson, he is a 25-year veteran in theater and film, working as an actor, producer, and director. You've done it all. Of those three tasks, which is the hardest?
Oh, I mean, I think without question, directing, I mean, you have to be so prepared, and there's so many logistical things that go into the process, you know, from making sure you're very familiar with your locations, your actors, your, you know, just your overall visual schemata, how you want to break, you know, a scene down in terms of its shots. And, you know, I never tire of seeing other directors' notebooks and seeing all of the, you know, all of the compositions that they do, and it's unbelievable. Recently, I was at the Museum of the Moving Image in New York, and I saw Scorsese's notes from Taxi Driver, and you know, I just had to sit there for a good 30 minutes and just flip through the pages, and it just mounds and mounds and mounds of notes upon notes and scribbles upon scribbles. It's unbelievable the amount of preparation that goes into it.
You mentioned Taxi Driver and Martin Scorsese. We had John Word of The Advocate on the show Friday, and somehow we got into a discussion about the best Robert De Niro movies.
Ooh.
Of course, he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor last night and did not win. Many thought he would, but he did not. But I said I thought my favorite De Niro film was Cape Fear. Someone wrote that it should be King of Comedy, but the obvious ones are Raging Bull, which
sure.
Keith, actually it was Trevor and Hammond who wrote that, and Taxi Driver. Joey Watson, your favorite Robert De Niro film?
I'm going to go with Goodfellas. I just think Goodfellas just stands out. You know, it's one of Scorsese's best, I think, as well. So you put the two of them together, though, and you pretty much always have a formula for success.
Well, and we know that your career has been wide, 25 years, but when you see talent like De Niro, you know that he's among the very best.
Well, did you see Silver Linings? He really is fantastic in the film, and a deeply personal project for him, too. So I was quite moved by his performance. If I'm correct in this, I believe his son had sort of the same kinds of issues. And so it was a deeply personal project for him. So It's good style.
He looked a bit like he'd like to get the heck out of Dodge at times. That was the first award of the night.
Sure.
And it was a night in which De Niro did not win. But when you've had a career like his, I'm not sure it really matters.
It probably doesn't. I think at that point it's probably about just continuing to do quality work and hone your craft. And, you know, another great film of his, Jim, is a little crime thriller called Heat from the mid-90s with Al Pacino and Michael Mann directed that. Very visually stylistic, fun stuff to see Pacino and De Niro bouncing off each other.
Hawk on Corsi says, don't forget Meet the Fockers.
Meet the Fockers. Of course. That's a comedy franchise at this point, right?
He has had a varied career as Robert.
Prolific.
De Niro. Daniel Day-Lewis, he won for the third time. And I didn't know it. I thought Jack Nicholson had won three Best Actor Oscars, but one was for Supporting Actor.
Correct.
I think this is the first winner.
I think he's now the guru. And what a great guy to have in there. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that he was a shoe-in. I mean, I was not surprised at all that he was going to win for that performance. He's phenomenal, you know, and we're lucky to have somebody who can just embody characters like that, you know. And he... You know, one of the greatest films he's ever done, I think, is Last of the Mohicans, which was I'm not a Michael Mann freak, but I just realized there's a connection there. Michael Mann directed that as well. But just what a wonderful adaptation of that Fenimore Cooper story.
Michael at the Capitol asks about your review of Quentin Tarantino. He won last night. You mentioned directing as the hardest part of the business. Quentin was the victor for Django Unchained.
Well, Django is a great, fun little film. I mean, I think the Academy still operates under this really interesting, we like Quentin, but we're still sort of scared of Quentin in a way because he just pushes the boundaries all the time. So you have to, I mean, I personally just think Tarantino's films are what we would call an experience. You know, I mean, you go to the film and you are definitely going to experience a large range of things. And certainly what I think Quentin's films to me are why they're so important or special is the way that he weaves film history, you know, and film narratives from the past with, he just blends genres so well. And so it's always neat because his films always seem so familiar, but yet at the same time, so jarring and jolting. He's really one of our premier artists working today.
Well, he was a bit irreverent in his acceptance speech. And
are we surprised? Not at all.
But that film was largely produced here in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. So that was a success story for our state. And I'm sure by virtue of his win that it will stay in the theaters a while longer. And it's been there for a while.
It's doing well. From last time I looked, it was doing quite well. And so, of course, any kind of Oscar win buzz typically spurs a longer engagement with theaters. Mm-hmm. So hopefully people will go see that film. It's quite provocative in a number of ways and, dare I say, very humorous at times. So it's certainly an experience. We'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. So who would you have voted for Best Actor?
Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis. Yeah, that would have been my choice too, without question.
A listener asked the connection between Daniel Day-Lewis and Marilyn Monroe, and I know this one.
Ooh, that's tough.
Daniel Day-Lewis is married to Rebecca Miller, who is the daughter of the playwright Arthur Miller, who was once married to Marilyn Monroe.
Clever.
In fact, Marilyn left Arthur Miller in 1961, and Rebecca, Daniel Day-Lewis's wife, was born in 62. So Arthur ended up getting with another lady. He was married to her until her death. And it's the mother of Rebecca Miller, the wife of Daniel Day-Lewis, three-time Oscar winner. You know, Daniel Day-Lewis had a nervous breakdown in 1989, and he's won three times since.
Maybe it helped him as an actor. I was familiar that it was around my left foot, right, when he was dealing with that. So I'm not
surprised. A lot of artistic people have issues, and maybe it goes with the territory.
Well, as an actor, I think you're trained to use what you have in terms of your resources and experiences that you've had in life. And so, you know, certainly if you've had tragic struggles, you want to pull from those things and share them. I think it makes your performance or yourself as an actor more real, more authentic in a way. And it certainly creates a strong sense of presence for you, you know, on screen.
And someone noted that Daniel Day-Lewis was funnier in 3 minutes than the much maligned Seth MacFarlane.
I can't argue.
In 3 hours.
I mean, again, it's got to be just a tremendously pressurized job to go in and host the Oscars. I mean, you know, I don't how many billions watched the show last night, and
but I like Daniel Day-Lewis's assessment that Steven Spielberg's first choice was Meryl Streep.
It was a great little inversion there, wasn't it? And it seems that's going to be one of those catchphrases that will be around for a while. And certainly no doubt those are two of the most preeminent actors of our time.
Here's another question. Why wasn't Ben Affleck nominated for Best Director? He gets Best Picture.
Well, you know, it's not the first time, I mean, that a director of a film that wins Best Picture has been snubbed. It happens quite a bit, honestly. And I think, you know, Ben Affleck and George Clooney even, I mean, Clooney of late has received a lot more due respect from the Academy. You know, it could be just that he's still just kind of considered green amongst some of those people. You know, I don't know. It could be that he irritated some of the Academy members. They wanted to vote against him. And the politics of the Academy are just fascinating. But, you know, along with someone like Catherine Bigelow, you know, who, you know, Zero Dark Thirty was a fantastic film. You know, and so I don't know if I can answer that question other than to say that, you know, they honor the film and they honor the work in different ways. And so maybe he has to, you know, go back to the grindstone and churn out another one. You know, I mean, I'm sure already this morning he's waking up going, okay, what's my next project or how do we get my next one going? Because you're only as good as your last project in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about the ladies. The Best Actress winner fell on her way to the stage to get her Oscar.
Someone on Twitter I saw said that she must have heard the gong to start the Hunger Games and she was running from the, you know, her seat or whatever. But bless her heart, you know. I mean, it was a beautiful dress and she looked genuinely surprised and shocked that she won the award, even though I thought she was phenomenal in that film. I mean, I was not surprised that she won, but she seemed quite surprised. Lovely, talented lady. Anne Hathaway, of course, I think was a popular and
Well, Jennifer Lawrence was the winner. I think she's only 22, by the way.
She is quite young, so she, you know, you're looking at long career here ahead of her, hopefully.
And one for Silver Linings Playbook, and you say you like that film.
I did. It was not, I think it was not what I expected it to be. I think I expected it to be more of a straight-up romantic comedy, and it ended up having a very touching dark side to it, which was compelling, I thought, as a viewer.
297-5633 as we wrap it up with Joey Watson of the LSU School of Music and Dramatic Arts, and we'll spend a few more minutes with him, and also we will we'll visit with some people on the cutting edge of science, technology, engineering, and math at Glasgow Middle School, including Laura Lee Cephalou. So all this is coming. If you'd like to join the conversation, you may also reach us at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Back after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Joey Watson, a quarter century in the film business. He's at LSU teaching digital media, among other things. And before we leave, we did want to note the topic of the last show, the TED Times LSU event that you're leading at LSU. So tell us, it's March 9th, right?
TEDx LSU is March 9th. It's coming up. It's upon us, basically. Happy to announce that the live event that's taking place at the Riley Theater is sold out, so we're thrilled to announce that. At the same time, I want to encourage people that if they would still like to participate in the event, there is a live simulcast of the event that will take place at the Shaver Theater, which is on the other end of the LSU campus, and they can go to our website, www.tedx.com, tedxlsu.com, and get a ticket to the free event in the Shaver Theater.
And I did want to note that the TED Radio Hour on WRKF airs Fridays.
So has that started now?
Yes.
For sure. Okay,
yes,
good. That's great.
Started noon and 9 p.m.
I knew it was coming, but okay.
So that is hand in glove with what you're doing.
Oh, it's great.
At the Old War School.
TED has just become sort of a media empire now. You know, they're online, they're on radio, they're on TV. And, it's great.
And this is not to be confused with TED the film.
Correct. Which we saw, yeah, right. We saw the bear last night on screen. But yes, there's several people that, you know, students mostly, but who go, TED, is that Seth MacFarlane film? No, it's much, much bigger than that, much more complex.
All right. Here's a question from Paul Scott. He says, with no Louisiana film winnings, will this help or hurt productions in Louisiana?
Oh, I think Louisiana film's doing fine. I see quite a few productions coming through, and I hear lots of buzz about people working on projects. So I think the state's fine. I think we need to, you know, to keep the tax credits the way they are, and that entices people. And I think we need to boost post-production here. I mean, I think that's the biggest catch. But there's so much innovation going on in the film industry here. Small businesses being startups, you know, in terms of being able to help the film industry. And so there's a lot of innovation that surrounds that that industry being here. And so I think we're, as long as the state continues to entice and make it profitable for the companies to be here, I think it can be a win-win. And we just need to get to work on that post-production stuff and keeping the productions here, not having them farmed back to other places for post-production process.
All right. Janet notes that in the past, the Oscars have snubbed the Bond movies. And then this ceremony last night, the Academy embraced Bond. And Skyfall actually won a couple of Oscars.
It did, and well-deserved. I mean, you know, I think what we've sort of seen is Bond films, you know, they've been around forever. And so I think that what you're seeing is they're becoming much more political in a way. I don't want to go too deep into that. But I think from a technical standpoint, we can certainly say that the advances in filmmaking technology have certainly enhanced the experience of a Bond film and have made them more energetic. So, you know, so the visual style, the sound, the visual effects, things like that have gotten much more sophisticated. And someone like Sam Mendes, who's a very, very talented Oscar-winning director, helming Bond films certainly lends credibility to it as well.
All right. George Becker writes, Friday's show brought back several memories. O.C. Brown, the former DA here, did block Life of Brian from theaters, but I remember seeing it in LSU's Cotillion Ballroom while Christians protested outside. He says, however, I have a different O.C. tale to share, and he talks about how he was not allowed to bring his daughter to Blazing Saddles on Plank Road, the Robert E. Lee Theater, the old Robert E. Lee, and he went and complained to O.C., and George says when O.C. heard his protest, he made sure that he got to see Blazing Saddles. He says, when I protested, the manager said we'd have to take our complaint to the DA since they were only following rules from O.C. Brown. Next morning, I went to see him. After meeting us and little Katie, O.C. apologized for our inconvenience, contacted the theater, and made arrangements for our little family to be allowed to see the movie at his expense.
That is a great little story.
I'm fairly certain, writes George, that I voted for him when he ran for re-election.
That's fantastic.
Well, thank you, Joey Watson. Good to visit with you again. Good luck with TED LSU.
Thank you so much.
And let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. Thanks.
All right. 297-5633. Do we have Skyfall Kevin Gallagher from Adele?
This is amazing.
That was Adele winning for Best Song for Skyfall. The first Bond film, by the way, to earn $1 billion at the box office. With a B, a billion. In studio now, two people involved with Glasgow Middle School. The dean is Jessica Mitchell. She is with us. And head of the parents' organization is Laura Lee Cephalou. And they're here to discuss some major advances at Glasgow in science, technology, engineering, and math. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning.
All right, Jessica. Well, tell us about Glasgow Middle School's involvement with this STEM night and focus on these areas where perhaps children in the United States and in our community are not getting as much attention and exposure as they should.
Absolutely. I'm going to let Ms. Cefalu discuss most of the STEM night activities. I have some information I'd love to share about Glasgow as far as some of our general accomplishments that sort of showcase our students, and STEM night is one of those opportunities where we like to let them shine. But we do have some amazing students at Glasgow. We have them representing more than 50 different cultures and countries. We have 13 high school credit courses possible.
Okay, run that by again. You have them representing?
Yes, representing more than 50 different cultures and countries at Glasgow.
Well, when you are they from other countries or representing?
Yes, yes.
That's
nationalities
great.
Based 50. In 50 different cultures.
That's 50.
That's 50.
So what other countries are included?
That's a good question, Ms. Cefalu. I've actually been at Glasgow about 5 weeks now. Do you know some of the nationalities?
You're going to have to get closer.
China and Japan, Korea. I mean, there are numerous countries. I couldn't even go
India.
India.
And all at Little Glasgow Middle School. How many students are there?
We have about 720.
And if you got 50 countries represented, and you're focusing highly on science and math, and as I stated, in the United States, the statistics are alarming regarding knowledge about these areas. You're trying to change the tide.
Absolutely. One of our recent accomplishments was that the EBR Parish Student of the Year was from Glasgow for 2012. And then related to science, Glasgow's Earth Day team, G-Force, won first place overall and first place in the middle school division of the 2012 ExxonMobil Earth Day Science Challenge. So there again, some really exciting things going on at Glasgow in the math and science departments, which again, leads us to STEM
right.
night.
Well, nearly two-thirds of teens who have been surveyed in the U.S. indicate they may be discouraged from pursuing a career in science, technology, engineering, and math because they do not know anyone who works in these fields or understand what people in these fields do. This is something that is, if the United States wants to stay competitive with the rest of the world, Laura Lee Cefalu, this is something I think that most of us would agree has to be changed.
Oh, very much so. Just like according to STEM Connector, United States ranked 17th in the world as far as in science goes and 25th in math.
Well, 17th in science and 25th in math. And we like to think of ourselves as the leader in these areas. Mm-hmm. We're not even close to the top of the pack, are we?
No, we're not. The National Science Foundation, 2011, did a survey. And what they showed was that the children didn't know some of the skills that were necessary for the science and, you know, technology, engineering, and math careers. They don't really understand the real-life applications of science, technology, engineering, and math. And so one of the reasons we came out with STEM Night at School is trying to introduce these children to the fields and what they do. It's a great opportunity. There's going to be so many people there for STEM Night. It's January 26th from 5:30 to 7:30.
January?
February.
I'm sorry, February 26th, 5:30.
It was last month.
So nervous.
That's all right. February 26th would mean tomorrow night, right?
Tomorrow night.
That's right.
At what time?
It's going to be 5:30 to 7:30.
Okay, and Glasgow is located 1676 mm-hmm. Glasgow, right off Perkins Road in South Downs.
Correct.
I'm told admission is at no charge. And along with the activities will be a demonstration of the Woodlawn High School Panth Robotics.
Right.
Team Robot. Tell us about this.
Well, they run a competition for the robot, in one of the robotics competitions they had a couple months ago. And they were real excited about coming. They had a challenge other teams in the nation last spring. And they actually placed very high. Just like Baton Rouge Madden High School is coming. They're presenting several demonstrations. Josetta LaBeouf, her students with engineering and chemistry. We have the Baton Rouge Fire Department, who's going to show the kids how science and math, you know, are very important and critical to their, you know, their careers. We have LSU College of Engineering coming, Capital Area right. Technical College. We just have so many exhibitors and sponsors, and it's been great.
Well, Glasgow, as Jessica, the dean, noted, educates a little over 700 students, about 715, grades 6 through 8, both traditional and gifted and talented classrooms, and about 37% are enrolled in accelerated or talented programs. What does that mean?
The accelerated and talented programs are for these students that come in and they just already have been identified to be extremely effective in their choices, whatever that may be. A little girl enrolled a couple days ago. She was talented theater, art, and music. It's not easy to put those schedules together, by the way. But, you know, basically we have opportunities for traditional students who come to Glasgow, as well as opportunities for those who want to take high school credits, foreign languages. We have French 1 and 2, Spanish, Latin 1 and 2 as well, computer science courses. We have 7th graders taking geometry. So there's a wide array of possibilities for students at Glasgow.
The emphasis on science, technology, education, and math, or STEM, and STEM-related jobs, this is a nationwide phenomenon, and for good reason, because it's estimated that 4 out of 5 future jobs will require some intricate knowledge of science and mathematics.
Absolutely. I think it's very important for students to understand that, and I think that STEM Night is so good in that way. We have over, I think it's over 50 tables that you have,
right,
in Cephalu.
Have
and
tables.
Just to let them see, as she pointed out, even, you know, the fire department is coming, just to point out that these things are so significant regardless of your field. And so I think it's going to open a lot of students' eyes to the wide possibilities as well as requirements that they're going to have to meet.
What's the second annual Glasgow STEM Family Night? That's STEM, and it's tomorrow, 5:30 to 7:30. At Glasgow Middle School off Perkins Road in South Downs, admission at no charge. And any parting thoughts, Laura Lee Cephalu?
Anybody is welcome. We have activities designed for kindergartners all the way up through 8th grade.
And you're in charge of the parents' organization.
I'm a science teacher.
So, okay.
Right.
So, do you have a child there? No?
No, sir.
No, okay. All right. Well, I'm glad you corrected me. So if you teach science, then you know exactly what we're talking about regarding the deficiencies that are apparent. How did you generate your interest in science?
Well, my dad was a physician. My mom's a chemistry teacher.
That always helps, doesn't
it? Does. It does.
Well, what about those who don't have the background that you do?
Well, we try to give them some of the background.
How do you cultivate that, though?
You have to love the material. You have to show a love for your job and for what you're doing. If you show that love as a teacher, those kids, if they don't develop a love, they will develop an appreciation for it.
Do you teach children in all three areas, all three grades?
I teach eighth graders.
Eighth graders. So you get them when they're, what, 13,
I get 14? Them when they're 13, 14, 15 years old.
Ready,
yes,
to go off to high school. And I'm sure if they have a good foundation in science, technology, engineering, math, then they're better off at the next level,
right,
and the level after that and the one after that. Well, 50 countries are represented at Glasgow, something I did not know. And will the students be there tomorrow night?
Yes, sir. I have anybody that's walked into my classroom the last 3 weeks, my kids have invited them to STEM Night. So if they were here today, Mr. Jim, they would ask you to come to STEM Night on Tuesday.
All right, Ms. Laura Lee. Well, good luck tomorrow night, and congratulations. How do you become a dean?
I'm still figuring that out.
You look much too young to be a dean, Jessica Mitchell.
Well, my experience was in math, and then I got my master's in administration and worked at the Lieutenant Governor's office developing educational programs, and just decided that I missed the atmosphere of the middle school campus. And so I'm one of those crazies that just needs that energy, and I enjoy it. So,
well, in a report last month on the PBS NewsHour, there was a conclusion that the United States is suffering from a shortage of applicants in the science, technology, engineering, and math fields, or STEM, and it's especially true for non-Asian minorities and low-income students. They're statistically less likely to be exposed to STEM professionals. This is an opportunity to change that, and we commend you for the work you're doing as a science teacher at Glasgow Middle School, and congratulations on your appointment as dean at Glasgow.
Thank you.
Jessica Mitchell and Laura Lee Cephalu.
Like I said, Jim, you're welcome to come, 5:30 to 7:30.
I need some indoctrination into this as well.
Love to have you.
So maybe I can learn some things. That's what life is all about. That's what this show is about on its good days, and today was a good one.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, as we've heard this morning on National Public Radio right here on WRKF, the BP trial is beginning, and there are reports that settlement talks are continuing, but there has been no settlement of late regarding the Deepwater Horizon tragedy in 2010. And the plan, worth a total of $16 billion if the settlement goes through, according to the New York Times and its pages today, would limit the fines paid by BP under the Clean Water Act to $6 billion, a proposal that could help reduce its tax liability. BP would also pay $9 billion in penalties to cover damages to natural resources, as well as the cost of restoration, and the remaining $1 billion would be set aside in a fund that could be tapped if unanticipated environmental damages related to the spill developed. And we will follow this story right here in the hours and days to come. Until tomorrow, for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. We thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.